Hello, thank you for joining At The Root of It. It is the 29th of December, possibly the coldest day yet of winter. This is At The Root of It with Aaron Fitzpatrick on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting today out of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we'll start today's program with a week in wine recap and in latest news that renowned Burgundy producer Nicolas Potal will produce Pinot Noir in Chile in 2010 in the Biobío region in a joint venture with Chilean group Viña Córdoba. They hired a French geologist to study the soils in Limari, Casablanca, and Lleida Valley, but decided upon Biobío, noting that it is latitudinally on par with New Zealand. So very good with respect to planting Pinot Noir. In March 2009, Potal was asked to leave the Maison and his business he created, Nicolas Potal, in France, by his management team. He now runs Domaine Potal and will be exploring new ventures, such as this one in Chile. And in the crop report, decanter consultant Steven Spurrier has slammed the Cru Bourgeois Bordeaux 2007 vintage, calling it lean, green, and turgid, quote-unquote. Spurrier's comments came during a decanter panel tasting of 164 wines from the vintage, which is documented in the February issue on Stands Now. Several prominent and experienced tasters made up the tasting panel, including MW's David Peppercorn and Susan Holm, and although most agreed that the 07 vintage was not spectacular, they weren't as hard-pressed as Spurrier, who claimed that they lacked freshness of fruit, character, and expression. Out of 164 wines, 15 were highly recommended, 96 recommended, and 49 stated as just good. And lastly, in the market feed in Wooster, Ohio, grape growers in Ohio have the opportunity to get financial help with costs of planting wine grapes next spring. The Ohio Grape Industries Commission created a new program whereby growers are encouraged to establish new vineyards in expanding territories. A total of $38,000 available through the U.S. Department of Agriculture Specialty Crop Block Grant Program will create the Vineyard Expansion Assistance Program, cover the cost of wine grape planting vines across Ohio. Each grower may apply for up to $3,000 per acre, with a maximum of 3 acres. In 2008, the Ohio grape industry set the goal of increasing vineyard acreage by 10%, or 220 acres, within the next 5 years. Haven't yet had an Ohio wine, but certainly with that speed of development, might have one soon. So before we take a short break, I'm going to let you know we have a two-part program beginning today with Stephen Storch from Natural Science Organics, based in Watermill, New York, Long Island. So we'll be right back after the break with Stephen.
Looks just like the sun, looks just like you, looks just like the sun. Looks just like it, but it looks just like the sun. Looks just like it, but I'm breathing, thinking on. Heart is pounding in his chest, reaches suddenly for his gun. Ship is sailing in the west, flower that could be his fun. Tree of antlers on his head, weary red split open eyes. I'm on the corner thinking about my bed. Ain't just stand still and signify. One, two, three.
Looks just like.
Welcome back to the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick at The Root of It. And thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch in San Simeon. Thank you so much for your support. And a welcome to my guest this afternoon, Steve Storch from Natural Science Organics. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
So I met you, 2 months ago out at Macari Vineyards?
Yeah.
And now I finally have the opportunity to welcome you here to the studio to talk about what you do out in Long Island. So Natural Science Organics, what is this?
Well, Natural Science Organics is a company that I started in 2004 in response to the need for ecological care for farm, landscape, aquaculture, you know, any situation where people are growing food, mm-hmm. plant material.
You saw there was a need for better care?
Yeah, I've been seeing that my whole life, really.
Mm-hmm. Which leads me into my next question. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I've studied marine biology through high school in Brooklyn at John Dewey High School, and then I moved on to Southampton College.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was always my attraction, was towards the environmental. But really it got tiresome hearing all about it and hearing about all the problems and what are people really doing mm-hmm. to offer solutions. So I set out to, you know, find some of those solutions and put them into practice from the book into reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I've done in the last... Really, I've been doing it about 20 years, but I, you know, initiated the business in 2004.
Well, as I mentioned in before the break, we're going to do a two-part show next week, talk a bit about terroir development with respect to vineyard practicing. But today, lead in with the discussion of exactly what you do, the processes that you offer in cultivating a healthy environment, and also defining a bit about these words that we hear so much, these terms that we hear so much when we think about farming, organics, biodynamics, vibrational farming, all of those things. So I know there's certain products that you offer within your own company, but above and beyond that, it's a philosophy, it's a way of living, it's a way of growing that really sets you apart from other farming techniques.
Yeah. Well, the biodynamic method was to me really a very fascinating thing to, you know, first see and witness, and that happened really quite by accident. I mean, how did I get involved in that? I was on the farm just playing in the compost on my new tractor,
mm-hmm.
and I looked over and saw my brother-in-law digging a hole with a friend of mine, Hugh Williams, an Australian orchardist who's upstate New York now on Threshold Farm. So really, seeing my brother-in-law with a shovel digging a hole kind of made me go over there and see what's going on, because that's really not his MO.
Okay.
And I go over, and they were burying these cow horns stuffed with cow manure. And I said, well, what, you know, what's going on here? What are you doing? And they said, oh, you know, this is biodynamics, and we're making this preparation, the horn manure, the 500 preparation, and this is how it's done. Really. And so that winter I just began studying it. And at that time, the Biodynamic Association was in Kimberton, Pennsylvania. And they had started a series of conferences developing the CSA, or the Community Supported Agriculture
mm-hmm.
concept on the East Coast, really. And I met a lot of good people there. And there was a lot of books for sale. And I really grew from there.
And how do you then translate that to what you're offering in through Natural Science Organics, your company?
Well, I've taken some of the preparation processes mm-hmm. and put it into a final form that's not as involved for people, so they can kind of take, you know, product A and B and just go out and use it. And kind of developed a whole system with mixing machines, or from small scale to big farm scale apparatus for doing, you know, anywhere from 30 to 100 acres at a time.
So rather than being the consulting enologist, you're the consulting farmer, viticulturist who will help somebody be able to manage their landscape better through more healthy composting and utilizing these machines to create these compost or these preparations which will enrich the soil further.
Yeah, and it's an enrichment through biological process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, you use chemistry, but really the chemistry arises out of the biology. So if you have a soil that's, you know, very biologically inactive through, you know, plowing and tillage and herbicide use and compaction, you know, the these preparations are a way to reinvigorate the soil biology, mm-hmm. and through the life processes of the microbes, the bacteria, protozoa, algae, the mycorrhizal fungus, the soil fungi, you really build up a biological bank which activates the mineral in the soil and makes it more available for the plant.
Mm-hmm. And we've covered in several past episodes of At the Root of It, the definition between organics, biodynamics, natural winemaking. In your own practice, do you go a step above organic and straight to biodynamic?
Yeah. See, organics is a good stepping stone, mm-hmm. and a building block for people to start at, but kind of the organic movement is kind of like the chemical mentality, but they're using organic inputs. They still haven't made the step into a holistic environment. So, you know, what the biodynamics does is it incorporates these holistic practices. So besides, you know, just dealing with soil biology and soil chemistry, you look at the farm or the vineyard as kind of its own individuality. It has its own personality.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to work with, you know, hedgerows or woodlands that are there and, you know, develop your bird life and your insect life of these beneficial organisms. Because if you have all that in place, you know, that's what displaces, you know, your pathogens. You know, your bugs like potato beetles that come in and want to eat up a crop, or your leaf hoppers that cause all these problems in a vineyard.
They will naturally be fended off by these natural existing prey of sorts.
Yeah, they're food for mm-hmm. the beneficials, and mm-hmm. plus, you know, there's this whole lot of the population is already there. So it's kind of hard for them to come in and get a foothold.
Sure. So have you found that in studying farming, landscapes, farms that have been stripped or just manipulated too much by the human hand, when they want to go back to becoming more of a healthy environment, you then have to almost recreate or replant things that would have existed there prior to a very manicured farm?
Right. And, you know, farming is an exploitation of the land. You know, you're asking the farm for food, grapes, for wine, greens. You're mining.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so really biodynamics is about a thought process of putting more back in mm-hmm. than you're taking out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of.
So somewhere along the way, we got it all wrong.
Well, there's a sense of entitlement people
mm-hmm.
have.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, we do have that because we're kind of the top predator.
Sure.
But if we want to sustain that or make it thrive and live, you know, there's a price to pay,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's the care of the land and the care of this whole environment from, you know, birds, bees, butterflies, insectiaries, areas of the farm that are left alone, left to be natural, and attract these things in.
And when I've studied biodynamics on the subject of wine, the name Rudolf Steiner the philosopher from Austria who really looked at the vineyard, as you mentioned, in its own micro environment of sorts. Who are some of the philosophers or farmers that you've learned from? You know, mentioned Schauberger, Nikola Tesla. I'm not familiar with these. Are you able to expand upon their studies a bit more?
Well, sure. Well, Steiner was a philosopher and a spiritual scientist, and he talked...
Amongst many other things.
Many things. I mean, he talked about medicine, art, architecture, economics. So he had a very broad, you know, palette he worked with. Victor Schauberger was an Austrian forester, and his family, he came from a 1,000-year line of Austrian foresters, and he had an amazing perception of nature. And he's the guy, they called him the water wizard. He's the man that designed real working log flumes, and he's got probably a couple of hundred patents from generators for electricity that ran, you know, with a water charging unit and using the mass of water to run a generator. And he is actually the one that put out the design of what's currently used now for the stealth bomber.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is what exactly?
Well, it's that flat wing plane that the military uses for.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was actually his design. He talked about that in the 1930s. That's in use today.
Mm-hmm.
Nikola Tesla worked here on Long Island in Manhattan in the 1920s, and he's actually the man that designed for the technology that you use for cell phones. And he had actually had plans for wireless electricity. And so I use Tesla's work when I use field broadcasters, where you're putting out energy patterns across a farm or vineyard to put out the biodynamic, what we call pattern energies, which if you break it down into the most smallest part of what's actually doing the work, it's a pattern energy. With has all the information for the growth forces in it, and we can use Tesla's, you know, technology married with Steiner's into that. And also Wilhelm Reich was an amazing guy with that, and Reich discovered what he called a bion energy, which is like the base unit of particle where life propagates itself from. And among other things, he was worked with people psychologically and physically, and he was
getting deep. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, that was back in the 40s and 50s.
So would you say that some of these people also then contribute to vibrational farming? I know you've spoken about that before, and as you mentioned, things about currents and you know, just that whole wireless frequency kind of feeling in my head. I'm thinking vibrational farming, that seems somehow connected.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, you know, Reich and Tesla are the main guys whose hardware I would use to set up a system like that. And from these systems, and when you get your place, you know, in that kind of energy field, it actually moderates the weather. Okay, and you can see that immediately by how it attracts insect life, beneficial insects, the bees, butterflies. When you were at the vineyard, all the hawks you saw in that resident population of those turkey vultures we have there. You know, those are all things that are flying around in the energy field of the vineyard and adding to it, cleansing it. You know, taking something and putting something back into it.
It's definitely an otherworldly feeling, it sounds like, in some respects, for someone who is not familiar or just not as used to being in an environment that has so much life force on its own. It seems a little bit wild to be talking about some of these things. But once you're in it, you're really in it, and you're understanding how everything is so connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like why people are so attracted to the seashore. You know, that strand where the water meets the beach is called the littoral zone.
Mm-hmm.
And where the sea meets the beach like that and the waves are breaking, whether they're big or small, the ions coming out of the seawater just fill the air. And people love to be in that.
Mm-hmm. There's a soothing aspect of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It balances you and, you know, harmonizes your energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break and be back to speak a little bit more about those cosmic rhythms. Thank you for listening to At the Root of It. It's a little Radiohead. Seemed pretty appropriate for today's conversation. For all our listeners, thanks so much for joining today. You can call in at 718-497-2128 with any questions for my guest this afternoon, Steve Storch from Natural Science Organics. So we just wrapped up that previous segment with scratching the surface on discussion about the interconnectedness of an environment or a farm, a landscape where all the things that are existing upon it are speaking to one another and creating a very rich environment for plant growth, which also then will lead into part two's discussion of vineyard or vine growth. So understanding the alchemy of cosmic rhythms on a farm, how will one begin to understand that if one's not a farmer? Besides the idea of what you just mentioned, the sea and how so many people are just drawn to it and its soothing aspect, it's pretty wild to think that all these creatures really are speaking to one another directly or indirectly to then translate to the health of a property.
The when you're observing the growth of plants, and you look, you know, all the activity initiates at the surface of the leaf. You know, the leaf is like the little solar panel, okay? Mm-hmm. And things like sunflowers and probably the leaves on the grapevines kind of follow the sun as it comes up and travels through the sky and kind of to maximize the intake of the solar energy. So, like right now, we're in the shortest days of the year.
Right.
Right. That's a big cosmic rhythm. So the way we look at this in biodynamics, you know, there's this broad seasonal rhythm. Mm-hmm. So right now the earth is inhaling and it kind of has just started to hold its breath on the first day of winter.
Right.
Okay. And now we've gone through Christmas. So by Three Kings Day on January 6th, the sun has already started its ascendancy back.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah. So the days will be getting longer again.
Right.
So, you know, that's a cosmic rhythm you're going to be able to see very soon. You know, the sun was not going to be setting at 4:15 and more and rising at 7 o'clock in the morning. The days are going to start to lengthen. So within that cosmic rhythm of this winter inhalation from, you know, mid-January to mid-February is the peak of what I call winter crystallization, where the forces of the cold winter crystallization energy reach a maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, the silica in the earth and the rock in the earth, well, And, you know, silica is the basis of our senses. Hearing, smell, taste, sight is silica. And, you know, your computer is all based on silica. So this is something you're really very familiar with. But the silica gets charged up by the outer planets, you know, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter. And that's where the information from the forces of growth comes from. So it stores that up in that midwinter period. And then that gets starts to get released again around Easter, when then that's the time when the Earth starts to exhale. And if you look and pay attention now, you'll start to see the first growth of plants, like the dandelion will start to bloom right around Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And set that rhythm up again. And so the forces of growth begin to become expelled. And the Earth kind of deadens with those forces as the forces of growth come out,
mm-hmm.
and expresses it above ground. Like right now, the Earth is so alive with this energy because it's taking it in. And the surface, you know, above ground, you know, the leaves are off the trees. You know, all our crop plants have kind of died off, or they're sitting there in this frozen state. But, you know, down in the soil underneath, the Earth is very active.
Very charged.
Very charged, mm-hmm. up, taking in these forces and getting ready again,
mm-hmm.
for next year. Like, we just had this big snowstorm, and that started, and when the smoke cleared from it, so to speak, I went out and I was, you know, cleaning up snow and stuff around the farm, and I just started to look around, and, you know, the buds on all the trees are all swelled up, ready to go next year. And during that time, underneath the snow, which out on the east end of Long Island was at least 2 feet deep,
mm-hmm.
and we had that week of beautiful sunny days afterwards, and when that snow started to melt and you could see where the grass was and some of the crops that were there, you could see that they actually grew underneath the snow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting as you're speaking, I'm thinking about humans and how we react to these life forces, and in winter kind of are holding things in, and then spring comes and we're all alive again. You know, it obviously is very connected in some ways.
Right, but, you know, that in winter, you know, really our rhythm is to turn inward. And, you know, we could do that now by, you know, reading books, mm-hmm. and watching movies. And some people like to get depressed.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, really, you know, our rhythm is very tied to this. And even though we're, you know, people don't really work on farms or live on farms or work in the landscape, they're in this bigger environment, and it affects you.
Right.
You know, you can't run around now like you did in June.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in it.
Right.
Right. So it, you know, you have to take that effect in and kind of process it and figure it out.
Yeah. Be aware of that and
yeah.
learn how it to best suit you or to deal with it, because everyone has seemingly different rhythms. So.
Right.
Yeah. Some people love the seasons, and some people actually don't really enjoy winter at all and will flee.
Yeah.
So when you talk about other aspects of farming, such as spiritual science and the shamanic earth healers, what is that referring to?
Well, in, you know, all of the ancient cultures, the American Indian culture, the South American Indians, Mexican Indian cultures, even if you go over into the Eastern European, like in what was ancient Khazar, by what's the Ukraine now, around the Black and Caspian Sea, all these people had shamans. And, you know, they would kind of prescribe when to start planting and harvesting. And these were just people that were more in tune to these rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were able to see in plants, you know, properties for medicine, for people, you know, medicine for healing animals, the earth, you know, things that your plants needed, you know, making different teas with things like nettles and dandelion plant and yarrow. So, you know, they take what we use, like, you know, I mentioned the radionics.
Radionics,
so,
yes.
You know, radionics is this little practice where you have like a little box that looks a lot like this.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're looking at the control box.
Sitting on the counter here. Sure. And you could, you know, there's a dial and there's like a little thing you open and it has a well.
Mm-hmm.
And you would put in a remedy into that, close it up, dial in a frequency, and you could broadcast it around the farm or a place or people use it.
So you're putting in some sort of formula which then will translate to its output onto the landscape.
Yeah, they would translate this pattern energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get these radionic cards that have the imprint of hundreds or thousands of different substances for, you know, earth medicine, people medicine, animal medicine, and people do these treatments. But, you know, if a conventional scientist looks at that and he tries to test it, he goes, well, this thing isn't really putting anything out.
Right.
Right. But if you talk to the recipient, there are people that actually get healed from this, and you could see properties in places, farms, vineyards, that will come to life using these methods. So,
no. So I'm still trying to understand how that works. So if you have these different, these formulas or different creations that are being inputted into a box, what are the different components that are working together to then output the energy?
Well, it would be the forces of growth contained within that substance. Mainly these are different plant extracts.
Extracts, okay. Say. Okay.
Okay. And all these different plants have different energy. They're mm-hmm. from, you know, the origin from the cosmic environment comes from a different place. And it goes into that individuality.
Right.
And forms it. Like, you know, you look at an acorn, and in that acorn, you know, is a 100-foot tall oak tree.
Sure. You know, yeah, that's wild, right?
Yeah, how does it do that?
Yeah.
Right?
I also think about it almost in like a soup. So think about a Tuscan soup, for instance. Mm. So you have all these things that are going into that soup, whether they be, you know, beans, and how then the beans interact with the tomatoes and then the pasta, and then how that's being consumed by a human, and how all those different nutrients are being, you know, absorbed into ourselves as different forms of energy.
Right. Plus the intent and the intention of the cook.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Very cool. So the radionics then is still something that you practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something we work with. I've kind of have more faith, more of the shamanic, because I see that that works also. And really, you know, that's what biodynamics is. When you think about what you're doing with biodynamics, you know, when you're making the preparations, you're looking for a plant to come into ripeness at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And the flower reaches a certain peak, and that's when you pick it.
Sure.
And, you know, dry it and get it ready for use. And then, you know, you have to obtain the sheath material that it goes into, and then marry those two things together. You know, leave them in the sun for the summer, and then bury them in the ground together in the fall. And then in the spring, you would take them up after a certain time. So there's a lot of intent and intention and attention going into that.
Right.
Yeah. So like, you know, the winter's happening now, and in, you know, what, 9 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks about, it's gonna be Easter. And the whole cycle starts over again. Right? So, and it always varies a little bit from year to year. Sometimes Easter is a couple of weeks later or earlier, because it's the first full moon. It's the first Sunday after the first full moon mm-hmm. in the spring. That's how they set the date for that. So last year was really early.
Right.
I haven't checked yet when it is next year, but, you know, that whole rhythm, you know, changes year to year. So, you know, that's, like, I use a plant like dandelion for a lot of different things. So I really, you know, watch for that rhythm, and once that starts, I'm like, oh man,
okay,
here we
time.
Go, here
yeah.
we go again. And then, you know, then it's a whole cycle of everything, the planting, setting up the greenhouse, getting things in flats, starting field work.
Good. Well, that field work and that development of the farm system is something we are going to speak about in our next session, our next part two with you, which is going to be terroir development. So taking all of these things that you have just spoken about and then relating them to viticulture and the work that you've done at Macari Vineyards, for one, with respect to creating a more healthy, biodynamic vineyard. So that is going to be all for today. But I wanted to thank you so much for coming on. And for our listeners, please check out Steve's website, naturalscienceorganics.com. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Well, I think that there seems to be an awakening among general population now about where their food coming from and who's growing it and where their wine comes from. And I think it's a great, great thing that, people are getting more into, their food.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to be continued. And thank you so much for our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch, and to our dual functioning engineer producer, Jack Inslee, in the studio. See you next week.